time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. No! Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Cad Bane has broken Zero the Hutt out of prison, and the Hutt Council demands that Zero tells them where he's hidden vital and incriminating information. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Quinlan Vos are sent to find Zero as well. There will be me apologizing to Ewan McGregor, because move aside, Obi-Wan Kenobi, because Quinlan Vos is here and he is beautiful. We're talking about Hunt for Zero this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
That's good. I'm tired. I was telling Chris I have to open in the morning, so I usually drink coffee during our podcasts. No coffee tonight.
I'm drinking tea. I usually have to work the next day after our podcast, but I don't. I got switched around this week, so I actually have the day off tomorrow. So I'm just the opposite. I have a big hot cup of tea, of Irish breakfast tea.
See,
getting ready to go down.
I'm a closing manager, so I usually don't have to open, but I'm opening all week because my opening manager's son is out of school, so we had to switch all of our shifts. Mm-hmm. And I don't get to sleep in to my normal waking up time of a great, bright, crispy 11:30.
Yeah, those are awesome shifts.
Yeah, but granted, don't go to work till 2, and I get off work about 10. So I still work 8 hours.
Yeah.
Just different 8 hours of everybody else. All right, so we have a lot to read this week, as in we, I mean me. So I kind of want to go ahead and get started.
Yeah, you got your work cut out for you this week.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. I've been kind of hinting at it the last few weeks, so I'm ready to get going on this one. But also, this was a really fun freaking episode,
so I'm really
excited to talk about it.
Yeah, this one was a much-needed step up in Season 3, boy, let me tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, so here we go. Let's talk about Hunt for Zero.
Take a nice deep breath.
It's daunting. I'm just going to go a paragraph at a time, and eventually I'll hit the bottom. All right. Hunt for Zero is the 53rd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on November 12, 2010. It was written by Craig Van Sickle and Steve Mitchell and directed by Stuart Lee. Now, as always, I'm about to give you the extra information about the episode and stuff. When you go to Wikipedia, it's 5 fucking pages long. So I just sifted through and got the best parts that I could find, which still ended up being really long. So, sorry. But it was so interesting.
There's anyway, a lot going on in this episode.
There's a lot going on. So here we go. Some extra information for you. This serves as a sequel to the Season 1 episode Hostage Crisis after Cad Bane busts Zero the Hutt out of jail. Henry Gilroy, who wrote many episodes of Clone Wars and is the executive producer of Rebels, said, Quinlan Vos was in an early draft of Bombad Jedi. He was working undercover and actually using his Force abilities to make it look like Jar Jar was a Jedi. Jar Jar was even fooled himself for a while. Vos is a fan favorite expanded universe character who had appeared in numerous issues of Dark Horse Comics Star Wars Republic series written by John Ostrander. Though his original character design came from a background extra in the 1990 film Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. While writing Vos, they drew on his character traits from the Republic comics, including his powers of psychometry and his tendency to bend the rules of the Jedi Order. Hunt for Zero drew inspiration from various sources. Mama was partially inspired by the obese vampire Pearl from the 1998 film Blade. The Randeed housekeeper droid in Mama's Hutt were an homage to the 1987 film Batteries Not Included. When Zero dies, he says, "What a world, what a world," in reference to a line spoken by the Wicked Witch of the West in 1939's Wizard of Oz. The musical number in Gardula's Palace was a tribute to the opening scene of the 1984's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Damn it, designer... you're stealing my notes, Dave Filoni.
I'm sorry! Designer Darren Minshall and supervising director Dave Filoni designed the headdresses worn by Snoodle's background dancers. The headdresses have been compared to those found in Lion King's have been compared to those found in director Julie Taymor's staging of the Lion King musical on Broadway. Quinlan Voss was voiced by Al Rodrigo, and Cy Snooty is voiced by Asajj Ventress's voice actor Nika Futterman. Hunt for Zero drew on other elements of the expanded universe as well. The Hutt homeworld of Nol Hadda has existed in the Star Wars lore since the early 1993's Dark Empire source book. These episodes mark the first appearance of Cy Snoodles in the Clone Wars. Snoodles was originally appeared on screen in the 1983 film Star Wars Episode VI: Return of the Jedi. Quinlan, oh my god, it just keeps going. This one actually I like though, because this was really cool, and it's really cool because I'm reading this book at the moment. So, Quinlan Voss went on to appear in just one additional episode of Clone Wars, the sixth season episode Destiny, as one of many Jedi gathered around Coruscant's Jedi Temple in a vision experienced by Jedi Master Yoda. He is also the main character of the canon 2015 book Dark Disciple, which was written with scripts that would have been the second half of Season 6 of Clone Wars. In Dark Disciple, the Jedi Council tasks Quinlan Voss to assassinate Count Dooku. He seeks out Asajj Ventress to help him with this task, and the two form a bond that tests Quinlan's chances of staying in the Jedi Order. The novel is part of the Clone Wars Legacy Multimedia Initiative, and it has been based on a whopping 8-part story arc.
Yikes.
It would have been an 8-episode story arc that was scripted for Clone Wars, comprising of the episodes Lethal Alliance, The Mission, Conspirators, Dark Disciple, Saving Voss Part 1, Saving Voss Part 2, Traitor, and The Path. The scripts were not produced as episodes prior to the show's cancellation. The novel includes a foreword by Katie Lucas, one of the writers of the original episodes, and skews towards adult readers, and let me tell you, it does, because I'm halfway through the book right now.
What do you mean, it's adult readers? It's bloody or is it sexy time?
Quinlan and Asajj have sex.
Sexy time.
It's not really like, you know, it's one of those of like, he moaned and kissed her, and then it goes to the next scene.
Yoda might read a book.
Yeah, like, it's nothing like that, but, like, it's, what's interesting is, I'm halfway through it, so please no one spoil it for me, even though someone already spoiled the ending, because I was like, hey, I would like to read this, and they were like, man, it sucked when that happened, and I was like, why would you fucking do that to me? But, it's interesting
much.
Because, Quinlan and Ventress start falling in love, and Quinlan is like, I'm a Jedi. So, it's a very interesting book so far, even though I already know the ending, which I'm still not happy with that person. Anyway, I almost don't know. Now, it's very rare on Wikipedia to have receptions for the episodes. Like, they rarely have, like, feedback from, like, critics or anything. So, when I found, like, a page worth of feedback about this episode, I wanted to pull some of that. So I'm going to read a few of these points from reviewers, and that way me and Chris can compare it to our thoughts and see if we agree. So, Hunt for Zero was received well by reviewers. Eric Goldman from IGN gave the episode 8 out of 10, although he found the horrifically obese Mama the Hutt to be awkward and the episode odd overall. He praised Snoodle's surprise betrayal as a well-sustained action sequence between Bane and the two Jedi. Filmmaker Brian Young, writing for TheExaminer.com, rated Zero the Hutt 5 stars out of 5, stating that it had just about everything I could ever want from an episode of Clone Wars. Young singled out the dance number's impressive animation, fun factor, and nod to Indiana Jones as making up for the overall slow pacing and for the disappointment of Kenobi being fought to a standstill by a non-force-sensitive bounty hunter. Obviously, this person doesn't know Cad Bane.
Right.
He also favorably compared Voss to the Big Lebowski's The Dude, including using his line, "That's just your opinion, man."
Yep, I got that. That's in my notes, too.
It's in my notes as well. Jan Derseman, an artist who collaborated with Ostrander on many of the Republic's Voss-centric issues, responded positively to the character's appearance in Clone Wars, naming the showcasing of his flair for the dramatics and his interactions with Kenobi as a highlight of an enjoyable episode. Now for the episode featurette! Why did I do this to myself? In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni says, "You gotta love the Hutts. They love a good time. They certainly know how to throw a big party. They love a big dance number. I thought the dancing girls were great. Darren Marshall, the designer, and I conspired to create these big kind of headdresses that look like the Hutts. They accepted everybody in all shapes and sizes. They really are a neat group of slugs. It reminds you of growing up and watching gangster movies with the musical numbers in the Chicago dance club. So there you have it. Along with that came a romance that shocked everybody. It's a love story between two of the most bizarre beings we've ever had in Clone Wars. What I love about the original trilogy is the romance between Han Solo and Leia and how that was going to work out. In the Clone Wars, you get Sai, Snoodles, and Zero, and how is that going to work out? Reading the scripts and the dialogue between Sai, Snoodles, and Zero at the end of Act 1, you sort of scratch your head and go, wow, we are kind of way far out there. Oh, I need a nap. Good lord. Now that I took all your notes. Blame Wikipedia. It was all on Wikipedia.
Hey, Hope.
Yeah.
You know who else loves to have a good time and knows how to throw a big party?
Ooh! You do it better, bud.
It's 9 a.m. on Friday. Yoda has box of wine and adult diapers.
At 9 a.m. on a Friday? Ugh, that's a little early for me. I can't say anything. My sister
Yoda will see you on Monday.
my sister's wedding shower was on Saturday, and I definitely had, like, 4 mimosas at 11 a.m. So I can't say anything. Granted, that's not my kind of crowd, so it helped getting drunk.
Yeah, don't bring Yoda to your sister's wedding. Just don't.
No. That'd be a bad day.
Yoda fits under all the dresses.
Okay, so, about this platitude. This one does work for the episode. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like they could have done something better for the episode. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't work!
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It works better for Yoda.
Can you do it for you?
I'm trying to put it into. I guess it does if you put Zero in. I guess it does when you put Zero and Size Noodles into the mix.
Yeah, but at the same time.
But that's not really a bit.
Don't
that's
break
not
through.
The theme of the episode at all.
The
that's,
theme of the episode is, oh my god, don't break Size Noodles' heart.
I mean, that's just a sidebar of where you go, like, how does that work?
In bed!
Fortune cookie?
No, I want to do
Damn
this
Damn it,
one,
Chris!
This one's a good one. This one's a good one for Yoda, anyway.
By the time we get to Rebels, we're going to have no...
Save that fortune cookie. You'll need it. You'll need it. When we need it, we'll need it. But, do not break glass except in case of emergency.
I just realized something. For Rebels, though, we don't have... they don't have morals, so we can save all the fortune cookies for Rebels.
We got... We're going to have to eat a lot of Chinese when we hit Rebels.
Yeah.
That's okay. I like Chinese food. All right, here we go.
Love comes in all shapes and sizes. Bad.
Whoa!
And that's true.
It does.
I guess it's true. It's truer for Yoda than it is for the episode. It's truer as Yoda's. Than the original is in the Yoda's works better for the episode, actually. At least in the case of Zero and Sai Snoodles. And hey, Zero the Hutt, not gay. as long as Sai Snoodles is female, I'm assuming she is.
Well, maybe that's his beard.
Maybe.
It could be she could be his beard. Though I guess you could also argue that, like, well, she was all like,
if it was Star Wars, you might as well just make it a giant beard creature, you know.
Oh my god, they just missed that opportunity.
Yep, they sure did.
Though I guess you could argue, like, even though Mama the Hutt was all like, you're my deadbeat son, like, she still loved her son enough to, like, send two Jedi to try and save him.
Sure.
So that's a love of a very big size.
That's what mamas are for.
God, I love Mama the Hutt. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but that was a thing. Yeah. It was like the TLC shows. Like,
yeah, I disagree with the guy above. Mama the Hutt was not problematic for me. Mama the Hutt was a high point.
Yeah. All right. So Act One.
Don't sound too enthusiastic there.
Just read for like 10 minutes. All right, here we go. Act One. Holy crap! Cad Bane busted Zero the Hutt out of prison back in Season 1, and we're finally addressing it! The Jedi Council assigned Obi-Wan Kenobi and the beautiful Quinlan Vos to find the missing Hutt. They don't know that the Hutt Council is currently holding Zero. Zero slithers before the Hutt family and is like, "Gentlemen, I know you all have missed me, and we're going to celebrate my beautiful face. Now, you guys freed me because I have some incriminating evidence against you, but it sucks to be you. If you kill me, that information in a holodiary, aka my old MySpace account, will show up on the steps of the Senate. Your move, slimeballs." And on Coruscant, Commander Cody comes up to his Jedi bro asking why Obi-Wan is trouble. Obi-Wan is like, "Ugh, Cody, I have to work with someone prettier than me, and he's crazy." And Cody is just like, I'm sorry, sir, but the fangirls are just going to love it. Quinlan zooms in on his ship, and he leaps from the running vessel, landing with a perfect landing. Cody all but claps, but he's very impressed. I love that moment. Cody is just like, ha! Anyway.
Quinlan, yeah, Cody's like, just like, "Yeah, your move, Skywalker."
I know, right? Oh my god, if Quinlan and Anakin ever had an episode together, Jesus Christ. Quinlan is like, "Kenobi, you look old." And Kenobi tried to be a dad and dadding him by going, "You're very late, young man, and you're not going out dressed like that." And Quinlan is like, "Whatever, man," because he's channeling his inner dude. Quinlan says Zero is probably being held on the Hutt's main planet because of his incriminating evidence against the Hutt family. They also need to capture Cad Bane, and Quinlan mentions that he owes Bane one anyway. He's gonna fly, and Obi-Wan will co-pilot. Obi-Wan looks at Cody and says, "If I die in a plane accident because of Quinlan Vos, tell my Force Ghost to haunt both him and Anakin forever." They leave for the Hutt planet of Nal Hadda. On the gross Hutt planet, the Hutt family showrunner knows how to throw a party, complete with barely dressed Twi'lek women, Sice Noodles as the maiden singer, and a rocking DJ throwing down some sick beats. So dabs all around, everybody. Backstage, Sai chats with one of her backup dancers, saying that the Hutts are an easy crowd tonight. The dancer is like, "Well, they're probably happy because Zero is locked up in a holding cell." And Sai is like, "Pardon me, I need to freshen up my gross skin and put some more lipstick on my grotesque lips." She sneaks down to the holding cell where Zero is being held and coaxes her way past the guards. Sai is like, "Zero, my one true love, my prince in shining slime, it's awful what they're doing to you." And Zero is like, "This is the worst. I'm being held like I'm the worst person ever. I like me. I think I'm wonderful. Too bad we can't be together, Sai, my snoodly poo. Because I'm in a cage and you are not." And Sai is like, "My slimy, whiny, lovey doo. I'm gonna get you out of here." What'd you think about Act One, Chris?
It was good to see. I didn't realize it until after I watched the episode. It's like, oh, I saw some Gamorrean guards in here.
Yeah.
You probably don't see Gamorrean guards again until Star Wars, until Return of the Jedi, which is pretty cool.
I think we see them one more time on Tatooine, but I'm not positive.
I love that the Hutt world is sort of like Cajun Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, the song is almost the song Anything Goes from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. The way they move the camera, the way they open it up, it's almost a shot for shot tribute to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And I was just like, oh god, I'm loving this. I'm loving it. And then when they show the Hutts, and I realize that Mustache the Hutt is basically Marlon Brando from The Godfather.
Oh my god, he is!
And Cigar the Hutt is this other character actor from the 40s called Sidney Greenstreet, who is always a gangster, you know, mob boss type guy with a chomping a cigar in his head. And on top of that, we get to see Gardula the Hutt, who used to own Anakin at one time.
Oh!
Yeah, that adds a little...
I didn't put in the extra.
It would have been
real.
What a different show it would have been if it was Anakin and Quinlan Vos on this mission, and Anakin got to see Gardula the Hutt, who probably doesn't remember him as a slave. He was probably just a slave child that she lost in a pod race. But still, he would remember her.
Yeah.
That would have been because a very interesting scene.
There was like a massive paragraph on Gardula the Hutt, but I already had so much stuff in the extra information that I ended up not putting it, but it was basically
I like that they did her subtle. She's one of the badassest of the Hutts. I think she goes over Jabba's head. I think she's like pretty much the kingpin of the whole deal. So I like that she was very, everybody else was kind of, really drew attention to it themselves and were sort of outrageous in their Huttness, and she was just sort of like, hey, you know?
Yeah.
She didn't really have to throw her power around. But I love it. It's just they established that this episode is firmly, like, stuck in the 40s gangster noir genre. And that's why I was just like, oh yeah, here we go. The music, everything about it is like the guy above said, it's fun. The music's fun. The color schemes, that it moves along at a pace. It's goofy, but it's fun. And I was just this first act, I was really stoked for this episode. And it's funny, I remember, you know, the ending of this episode, but I didn't remember it being particularly good or really thinking of any of the stuff I thought about watching it this time that is so obviously on its surface, you know, the tributes and stuff. So I'm enjoying this a lot more than when I originally saw it. I don't know how this one sort of got under my radar.
I said that a couple times because, like, in my act three, I have this note about Sidious Snoodles that I completely had forgotten about her.
Yeah, me too.
And I also, like, I just forgot how good this episode was. Like, I could remember it was, like, the best part of this episode is Cad Bane versus Obi-Wan Kenobi and Quinlan Vos. But I forgot about the rest of the episode, and I think,
Quinlan Vos just made you forget about everything else.
He did.
I
forget a lot of things.
He's a little, like, his characterization's maybe the only thing I have a problem with in this, but I don't know much about him. I've read a couple stories in, like, Star Wars Tales, I think, had a couple of Quinlan Vos stories in it. But he's just a little too much of the, like, sort of, like, caricature of the rock star, you know, like...
Yeah.
Hey, man, your opinion, man. Hey, rock and roll, put on his sunglasses. Yeah, I stuck my landing there.
I wrote that he was Anakin on steroids.
Yes, he's, you know, I mean... It's just a little too, like, stereotyped of the rebel guy. He's got the long hair and, you know, the toed. I got a toed, man.
I think that, like, I'm a little bit more fond of him because, like, since I'm reading Dark Disciple, I'm in Voss's head.
Yeah.
And so, like, being inside Voss's head, like, a lot of it is just front for him because what he's mainly used for in the Jedi Order, according to Dark Disciple, is he's the one that, like, since he's kind of, like, more normal than most people, he's just the undercover guy. So, like, he'll go undercover for months and just, like, play this role as, like, the cute swap guy, and, like, he's like, really capable and stuff. And then he'll walk in, bag his bad guy, and then go on to the next mission.
He's got a shade of the American Indian to him, too, of Native American.
Yeah.
Which adds to the trackings. He does tracking, you know. And that was always how, like, you would portray Native American trackers, and the, you know, they would kneel down and touch something on the ground or sniff something and be like, "Oh yeah, they came through here. I can smell their cologne," you know, or whatever. But, you know, Quinlan Vos can just touch something and see who's touched it and what they were doing with it. So But
I'm laughing because you just reminded me, because, like, I've talked about it before, but one of my new favorite shows is Timeless. By the way, they dropped their second Jedi joke from Matt Lantern. So far, Timeless has two Jedi jokes from Matt Lantern, which is amazing. But they had an episode where they went back and they saw Bass Reeves, who was the inspiration of the Lone Ranger. And he had a half-Native American friend who was his partner. And they were like, oh my god, it's the Black Lone Ranger in Tonto! And so they were tracking the bad guy of the show. And Rufus looked at the guy who was the Tonto inspiration. He was like, so are you going to, like, track him? He was like, oh, yes, I'm going to look at broken twigs and smell the dirt. And he was like, really? He's like, no, we're going to go talk to the authorities, you tontos.
Yep, exactly.
So, yeah, For me, I absolutely love the musical number as well. I love the design of the Hutt Palace and the headdresses. Really, like, when I saw that thing about the Julie Taymor Lion King, I've actually seen that play on Broadway, and I was like, oh, totally, I can totally see that now.
And the way they lit it, it's just like, it's very dark in all the hut places, but there's sharp lights on brightly colored things, so it's just like brightly colored things moving through a dark background. It's really beautiful and well thought out and executed.
But I gotta say, damn, those are some skimpy dressed Twi'lek women.
That's how Twi'lek women dress, I guess, when you're a slave of the Hutts.
I don't even think the one in the original trilogy that Jabba threw down into the pit with Luke, I don't think she was.
Well, she was chained there. I think she was somebody who went awry, you know, who would, like, shot off her mouth one too many times, or was late for hut dancing practice one too many times, and so she was on double probation, and then...
But even then, she wasn't dressed that skimpy. Like, I was trying to think of, like, the only other time I can think of anybody being dressed that skimpy was Leia's iconic gold bikini.
You can get away with a little more if they're animated, you know, CG characters, maybe.
Yeah, but, like, this is a kid's show, and I was just like, ugh. Wow, they got away with that one.
PG-13 kid show.
That's true. I will give you that. So a couple questions I had. This isn't a question, but man, Dave Filoni has some balls giving us such a gross romance with Science Zero. But I actually really like it because it kind of gives some extra layers to Zero, who's just kind of been a very surface character.
It's so like a 40s romance, and not a romance, but like a seedy romance, where, you know, he's the big gross gangster, but he's got money and power, and, you know, Cy Snoodles, whatever her you know race is, you know, she might be like, you know, I'm assuming, since she's the singer and the way she's treated around the club and the way she acts, is she's like a 10 of her species. So she's a bombshell, you know, and Zero is this gross, you know, he's probably the least grossest of the Hutts, because he's the most sort of like polished up and like decorated or whatever, but he's still a big gross Hutt, but, you know, so that's just very, you know, she's the classic gangster mall, you know, the blonde in a tight dress, you know, hi honey, and at the club, and he's giving, you know, pouring her champagne, and he's weighs 350 pounds.
Yeah.
So I think it works, you know. I think it works in the, like, idea of the genre.
So I have two more points. Number one, ready for my really gross question of the day?
Always.
How do Cy Snoodles and Zero the Hutt have sex?
Well, I mean, you can always answer that question with any characters that have mouths. At least they can have some sort of oral sex. And with these two characters, all the possibilities of oral sex become instantly hilarious, because she's got lips that stick out on the end of a stalk, and he's got a big, just like gross slug mouth. So instantly. And they actually kiss.
I know. These, like, really, like, loud slurpy sounds.
Yeah. And I mean, let's face it. Cy Snoodles' mouth and lips are actually phallic. So there could be all kinds of things. So Zero might have, you know, he's maybe she's a beard. Maybe he's just, maybe he's, maybe he, I'm not gonna go into graphic detail, but yeah.
Well, save it's, that for
I mean, the, yeah, I mean, where there's a will, there's a way, right? You know?
Oh, man.
Love conquers anyway. All. How about that? That's a little nicer, I guess.
My only other point was, Quillen says that he owes Bane one anyway. And I'm sitting here going, hey, what does Quinlan owe Cad Bane? What has happened between Cad Bane and Quinlan Vost in the past? I need to know these things. Like, that makes it sound like they've had run-ins before.
Well, I think Cad Bane is in the tier of bounty hunters where he's so good that he's probably running into... That's why he hates Jedi so much. He's probably Jedi are pretty much the only people that are... If you're going to scuttle one of Cad Bane's plans, it's going to be a Jedi that does it, you know, so...
And I also like the idea of, like, knowing, like, what Quinlan Vost usually does. Like, he's an undercover guy.
He's an undercover tracking person, which means probably if he's after him, there's bounty hunters after him, too. So he probably runs into bounty hunters more than the average Jedi.
Yeah. I just would love to know what happened between them. Like, I would just absolutely love to know that.
Well, they were setting it, you know, I mean, that's just the kind of thing that's just the kind of world-building thing you mention, and then, like, you could either leave it up to people's imaginations, or if you wanted to in the future, you could go back and tell that story, you know?
Yeah. I would love it. Love it. That's all I have for Act 1.
All right, let's, I was going to say this is my favorite act, but I would be lying, but it's a good act.
This entire episode is good.
Yeah.
I like every act for completely different reasons, so...
This is my second favorite act.
Alright, Act 2. Obi-Wan and Quinlan arrive on Al-Hada and stand before the Hutt Council. Obi-Wan begins diplomatically, but Quinlan quickly goes, "We know it was you guys who did it! Now where's our Hutt, motherfuckers?" And Obi-Wan facepalms and tells him to shut up, since the Hutts are allies to the Republic. Quinlan sees a cup that Zero dropped back in Act 1 and uses his abilities to see past events through the objects, which is pretty freaking cool, I might add. Quinlan fakes, "Welp, you're right. I'm a loser and the Hutts are awesome. Let's just get going, Kenobi." And the Jedi leave and Quinlan tells Kenobi that Zero was there. Cad Bane emerges from the corner, glaring at after the Jedi, knowing that these guys are going to fuck with his bread and butter. The Jedi rush to the holding cell to find Zero has already been captured, and then they leave. The Hutts realize that Zero is gone and thinks the Jedi freed him. Cad Bane kicks in the door, screaming, "Hold the damn phone! The Jedis are idiots. I know for a fact. Somewhere in this timeline, I broke into their temple and stole a holocron from them, but I don't even know where exactly in the timeline that is, but it's not important at the moment. The point is that the Jedi are dumb. Anyway, hire me again, and I will find out who took Zero away from you." Obi-Wan and Quinlan are making their way cross-country through the swamps of Nal Hada. Obi-Wan is like, "Hey, Aragorn, why are we Lord of the Ringings it? I try to turn that into a verb. It doesn't work. "Hey, Aragorn, why are we acting like we're in Lord of the Rings? There we go. Why wouldn't Zero just hop off the planet?" And Quinlan is like, "Well, my little Frodo, my senses say that he's still here." A massive swamp snake attacks Obi-Wan, who quickly disposes of it. Quinlan is not impressed. Though in Quinlan's defense, it's hard to be impressed when you're perfect. Zero and Sai arrive at a little house in the middle of nowhere. It's the house of Mama the Hutt, and she's all gross. Like, super gross. She pulls the good old mommy, "Son, why don't you ever call me?" on him. She calls out Zero on his bullshit, so Zero gets right down to business. He wants to borrow his mom's car, aka her starship, and go get some business done on Teth. Mama the Hutt pulls a, "Well, just fill up the gas tank when you're done, don't crash it." Cad Bane and his droid Toto are zipping through the swamps trying to find the Jedi. Bane is like, "Dude, Toto, I am never working for the Hutts again." And Toto is like, "I hear you, bro." Their boat passes, and Obi-Wan and Quinlan emerge from hiding, realizing that Bane is after Zero as well. The Jedi arrive at Mama the Hutt's house. Obi-Wan says that they need to be cautious, and Quinlan is like, "Fuck the rules!" and kicks in the door like Grievous. Obi-Wan is like, "Oh my god, you can't just kick in people's doors, you ignorant swine!" Mama the Hutt throws her parasites at them, which is so great. She just throws her parasites at them, screaming.
She chucks them at them like the, well, you don't watch Simpsons, but like the crazy cat lady in the Simpsons chucks her cats at people.
I know. Mama the Hutt throws her parasites at them, screaming, "You bust into my house? You gonna get wrecked, boy! You bust in here like my deadbeat son and his nasty-ass girlfriend and that big hat blue guy, Chad Kane, or whatever, and bless my soul, I'm gonna have a heart attack at this rate!" She tells him that Zero is heading for Teth, and the Jedi race to save Zero from Cad Bane. Mama the Hutt screams, "Hey, who's gonna pay for my dough?" What do you think of that, too?
There's a little bit of, now this part has little bits of 70s buddy cop show. That whole sequence, like, who's gonna pay for my door? That's right out of a 70s mismatched cop TV show. It's great. I love this episode so much. I mean, it's got a million Star Wars wipes in it, fun colors. I mean, Zero's got a space propeller boat.
To drive
through the swamps with, and it's just, I mean, it has the same kind of controls, except it's got space propellers on it. So awesome. And I love that, the Hutts are Cajuns, you know?
And while we're talking about, like, genres and stuff, like, maybe because I live in the South, I can name so many people that Mama the Hutt remind me of.
Yeah. I mean, Mama the
Hutt. Like the little Southern belles that are just like, "Oh my stars, oh my lord." I think I put in my act 3 notes, but she actually kind of reminds me of my aunt a little bit. Because my aunt's one of those people who loves to be miserable but does nothing to fix it. And she's a Southern belle. And she's just like, "Oh my lord, my stars, my life is awful. But I'm not going to do anything to fix it but bitch and complain." And don't get me wrong, I love my aunt to death. I love her to death. But still, like, living in the South, I can name a bunch of people that Mama the Hutt remind me of because I see them a lot.
Now, I have a question for you. Maybe I'm forgetting something. Wasn't Toto blowed up?
See, that's where I think Holocron Heist, I believe, takes place after this.
Okay.
Because Toto wasn't blown up until Holocron Heist.
Okay, I'm getting that mixed up when they busted him out then with Hostage Crisis then.
Hostage Crisis, Toto helped, but he was not there. I'm pretty sure Holocron Heist was afterwards. I'm gonna double check the timeline right fast just to make sure.
Because this is funny. This is more of proof than like the last episode, where he and Toto seem to be like friends, you know, or have been working together long enough. It totally goes against the total sort of disregard that he pays towards Toto in Holocron Heist, you know. I like him better as friends than as Toto is just his disposable robot.
Let's see.
As we'll find out in part 3, Toto fights, you know, along with him, you know. So, yeah, okay, so that answers my question, I guess.
Wait, maybe?
I mean, I'm pretty confident.
No, wait, this takes place after Holocron Heist in the timeline. Mm. That doesn't make sense. So this is like Toto 2.0.
Maybe he has a bunch of Totos in a crate back in his ship or something, yeah.
Yeah, Holocron Heist happened before all of this was Zero, so I guess he just got a new Toto, and this one's 12 times more evil. So apparently, yeah, all this stuff with Zero took place later. So this is just another Toto, I guess. Or he rebuilt Toto and make him more of a dick.
Yeah, I mean, I think, wouldn't, you know, like with our technology, say you had a robot like Toto that could get blown up, right? Before you just make a bunch of little Totos. Before he leaves the ship, he dumps all his memory into the Toto. And then he hits this space Bluetooth, which records all the memories that he's doing, whatever he's doing on his mission, beams it back to the other Toto, adds it to his memory. Then if it gets blown up, it just turns on the other Toto and he's back at the ship like somebody in a video game that's getting regenerated, you know?
Yeah.
Respawned.
I guess that kind of does make sense because I know we mentioned it last week that there seems to be like two different Totos. Because Toto was so drastically different last week and we're talking about it now. So I guess that does make sense that this is like Toto 2.
Or something, yeah. I don't know. They don't Toto really explain 2. It. Well, it's good to see him back either way. Even if he is a continuity or But that's all my my notes are. I was really impressed by the Swamp Mobile. I want a Swamp Mobile.
Yeah, their little airboat. I love it.
The only difference is they didn't wear the headphones, the noise canceling headphones that people have to wear on those things.
Yeah.
You always see people with goggles and with headphones on.
So some of my notes. Here's a fun question: if they ever did a live action Quinlan Vos, who do you think would they cast to play him?
Oh, jeez. I don't know. He's a very generic looking face. You know what I mean?
It would have to
be somebody like Hispanic, I think. He looks very from Inca area of Central America. You know what I mean?
Or maybe like American Samoan.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Because I think it's Stargate Atlantis, but Jason Momoa in his younger days. Because he has those like long dreadlocks and like
he's got the dreadlocks like he's Jamaican, but he does not look Jamaican. He looks more his Spanish, or indigenous, a little indigenous to him, So, but
I would also throw out Rami Malek. I think he would do a really good job. I mean, he doesn't quite have the look of Quinlan, but Rami Malek's just insanely talented anyway. So. But I was definitely getting a very young Jason Momoa vibe from him. Like, Jason is now, like, super buff because he's Aquaman.
I was going to say, there's actually an actor out there who played Quinlan Vos. But
yeah.
That was 20 years ago almost. So, yeah, he's obviously a bit older now. But there is an actor out there who played Quinlan Vos. So,
yeah.
You could at least, maybe he has a little brother or something.
Yeah. I wrote, man, I love Mom of the Hutt. She reminds me of the Geonosis Queen that we both like so much in the zombie episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And she's just so gross with all the like flies zooming around her. And she has like remora fish crawling all over her body and she throws them at them. But like she's also portrayed like a real mom. Like the whole like, you never call your mother.
Well, that's
and you're
the whole,
here
that's
now.
Always the whole point. No matter how gross your mom is, she's still your mom, you know?
Yeah. And, like, she even goes off on Jedi, like, talking about Sai, and, like, talking about how, like, it's Zero's limp girlfriend, and she's like, your girlfriend is nasty, Ash. Too not good enough for my baby boy.
I'll bet you she was making space moonshine out there, too. I'll bet you that's how she got her start.
Oh, man, that'd be great. Though I was wondering, like, why do Zero and Mama speak the common language while all the other Hutts speak Hutties?
Because they have the most dialogue and the most narrative need for us to have them speak English,
and that was my answer too, but it's just kind of odd, like especially in the act one when Zero is talking to them, like you would think that they would be talking, it would be like in subtitles, like when addressing the Hutt council, I feel like Zero would be talking in Hutties, but like talking to Sai makes sense to like,
well, Hutties sounds like a fit. I want to say not a fake language, but it sounds like a language that's made up to be very simple and universal, sort of.
It reminds me a little bit of Pig Latin.
Yes, exactly. It's blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. But it's close enough that you can definitely pick up certain words.
Yes.
Like, there are certain words that you can definitely tell.
But that's the thing is, it sounds like it has a very small vocabulary because you hear a lot of the same words in it. And I mean, as a language, it's a developed language. Ben Burtt would develop the languages he would make them have a structure and stuff so that they were like a real language. And the words had meanings when people spoke a language for any amount of time in Star Wars. So Hutties, you can actually like write stuff in Hutties. You know, Ben Burtt somewhere has a dictionary of Hutties, or at least enough to get, conversational Hutties. As a matter of fact, you know what? Hang on just half a second while I grab Ben Burtt's Star Wars Galactic Phrasebook and Travel Guide.
Oh!
And let me check to see if there's an index in it.
Hey, can I ask you a question while you're looking?
Yes.
Who's Ben Burtt?
Ben Burtt is the sound designer for every Star Wars movie up till The Force Awakens.
Oh.
He's the guy who designed the sound of the lightsabers. Okay, I think I'm looking at Yeah, oh yeah. Here's all the numbers in Huttese, favorite foods and drinks. Oh yeah. Nobo, Bo, Dopa, Duba, Fuana, Kwana, Kita, Goba, Hunto. I just counted to 10 in Huttese.
Huh.
And hey you is Chuba, which is when you hear, who are you? Achu Apekni. What do you want? Hi Chuba Danaga. So, yeah, he's... You bother me, Kibatu Batu. Going somewhere?
This kind of reminds me of the Bounty Hunters episode where they needed to make up a language for Imbo. So Dave Filoni just read from Smurf books in really terrible French.
Mm-hmm. you're going to pay for that. You Wama Wonka? That's one right from Return of the Jedi.
Hey, you Wama Wonka with me? Well,
and it's
you
not
wanna...
you're going to pay for that. It's you're going to pay for that?
You Wama Wonka with me?
Whoa. So, you Willy Wonka yeah. with me?
Willy Wonka! Oh, Gene Wilder.
There's no equivalent of thank you in Huttese. There's no equivalent of please in Huttese.
Well, do you think the Huts ever say please and thank you?
I guess not.
My last note, and you might be able to shine some light on this, because I will be the first to admit, I actually don't know a lot about Gardula. So you might be able to answer some of these questions I had. Mazura says that Gardula the Hutt won't come find him at his mom's house. And Mama the Hutt lives in a pretty shanty house, like, in the middle of nowhere, like, away from all the other Hutts who seem to be living in luxury, like, in, like, a palace. So if Mama the Hutt doesn't seem to like Mama the Hutt also doesn't seem to like Gardula very much either. So I'm wondering, what happened in the past between Gardula the Hutt and Mama? And also, what did Mama do for her to be living in much more shittier conditions than the rest of the Hutts?
I think the other Hutts came from more money, and you know those Hutts have like their crime syndicate, whereas Zero and Mama the Hutt probably are selling bootleg moonshine in the bayou, and they've got power too, but they're more of like a, you know, they're sort of the Poe White trash of the.
Well,
the Hutt clan.
Just so you know, I read on Wikipedia, Mama is also Jabba's mom.
Oh, really?
Mama is also Jabba's mom. Zero and Jabba are brothers.
That's right,
that's right. That's why Rutta Stinky is his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like, that's why I was just thinking about that. I was like, why is Mama all the way out there?
She's
away
the black sheep of the black sheep of the family, you know, and maybe Jabba, they like Jabba more because he's like them. And Zero is more like his mom. He is more like his mom, you know?
You know, I just thought of something, because in Act 3, Zero is talking about how he never had the heart to say that their dad, his dad ran away and died.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe when the dad ran away, like, he did something to, like, really hurt Zero and Mama's name. But Jabba was already established enough to where it didn't hurt him.
Right.
That could be something, but also the other idea I thought, and this is going to sound absolutely horrific, so I apologize now. You know, on those shows, like My 800-Pound Life, My One-Ton Life?
Yes.
It, like, they have to Feeder actually,
Gainer
like...
Gainer stories.
They have to actually, like, saw out walls to move people to hospitals.
Yeah. Gilbert Grape style.
Yeah, or if, like, someone super obese dies, they have to, like, remove sections of the house to get them out for, like, funerals and stuff. What if she's just so big, they can't move her?
She's just...
But she has a starship.
Starships are pretty big.
Yeah.
That's the thing, it's Star Wars land. She could have a nice little platform that just floats her around, you know?
I was about to say the same thing, too, because we always see in, like, Rebels, like, when they steal things, they put them on, like, hover things, and they, like, lift these crates and, like, easily push the crates.
Yeah,
space
hover-rounds are, you know, I mean, we saw a space hover-round in episode 2?
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah.
So I was just wondering about that, like, just because I don't know a lot about Gardula the Hutt, so, like, I was just wondering what made Mama and Gardula, like, not be good friends.
Bad Hutt blood.
Yeah.
It's crime families. There's gotta be lots of scandal and weirdness and grudges and deals gone wrong.
Well, obviously, that's what they're all chasing, is this holodiary. Yep. Like, obviously.
They're gangsters. They all gotta hate each other. They're all in competition with each other. They're all plotting and scheming against each other. That's how it goes.
Even Al Capone had a brother who changed his name, and he was a police officer because he didn't want to be associated with his little brother. Yep. Like, I mean, we have it in our own history as well. Thanks, Timeless.
That must have been tough for that guy, yeah.
Thanks, Timeless, I stole that from you, but it's true. It is true. Al Capone really did have a brother who was older and separated himself from the family and became a police officer. So, but unlike Timeless, his brother didn't take him out. So, all right, Act 3?
Act 3, my favorite act.
I would have to say this is probably my favorite act, too, because it's one of my favorite. Yeah.
I have one note on this act, and it's enough.
I have a couple. More than a couple. Actually, I don't remember what I wrote, but we'll see. Anyway, Act 3. Zero and Sai arrive on Teth, to the grave of Papa the Hutt. They open it and find Papa's body holding the holo diary with all the information about the Hutts on it. Sai gets the diary for Zero and then fucking turns on Zero's slimy ass. Zero is like, hey, I was supposed to be tricking you. I mean, what about our vacation in Cabo? And Sai is like, fuck that! You broke my heart, you son of a bitch! Don't fuck with a pissed off, heartbroken woman! And she shoots him dead. Damn, girl! Cad Bane and Toto arrive to find that the diary is gone. I wrote Daria? To find that the Daria is gone, and Zero is dead.
What are we, back in Cheech and Chong, Beavis and Butthead land?
I don't know. I was thinking maybe like 90s show Daria, but anyway.
Yeah, she came from Beavis and Butthead. It was a spinoff of Beavis and Butthead, man.
Things I don't know. Daria was like my older sister's generation, so I like just barely missed it, but I caught enough of it. Cad Bane and Toto arrive to find the diary gone and Zero dead. Cad Bane is like, man, I hate when people kill people instead of me. But his day isn't getting better because Obi-Wan and Quinlan Voss arrive too. When the Jedi come, Bane is like, look guys, I didn't kill Zero, so let's just go about our day and not have to kung fu fight each other, okay? And Obi-Wan is like, excuse you, you held the Senate hostage, we are taking you to jail. And Bane is like, well, I didn't kill Zero, but the Separatists are offering $1 million a head for a dead Jedi. So you guys wanna kung fu fight this out? And they kung fu fight! Bane is awesome, holding his own and using all his tricks to keep the Jedi separated. From tripping Quinlan to using a fucking flamethrower, he stays two steps ahead of them. Even Toto gets in on the action, pulling Quinlan's lovely dreadlocks so Bane can tackle him. Toto even briefly steals Voss's lightsaber, but Obi-Wan snatches it back. But Cad Bane steals the lightsaber, and he faces off with Obi-Wan, and it's amazing! And I completely forgot about that part, and I started screaming crazy-like. I was like, he has a fucking lightsaber! And with Toto grabbing his master's fallen hat, because every good bounty hunter needs a bitchin' hat, Cad Bane and Toto get back to their ship and escape the Jedi. Obi-Wan looks at Quinlan and says, I never did enjoy hanging out with you. And Quinlan says, don't hate me because I'm beautiful. On Tatooine, it's revealed that Jabba the Hutt paid Sai Snoodles the entire time to kill his brother Zero. Sai is like, well, don't hate me because I'm beautiful. And everyone was grossed out. The end.
My only note is, in all caps, awesome fight. That's a Star Wars fight right there. That makes the whole episode worth it right there, and the rest of the episode is great on top of it. That fight is amazing. Oh, I love it. They get his blasters away, and then he's got laser, like smaller lasers on his wrists. It's just and the one guy's like, I was disappointed that he fights Obi-Wan to a standstill. What do you mean you're disappointed? That's what I was disappointed last time when Cad Bane was a comedy stooge to C-3PO, you know?
Yeah.
This is what I want to see Cad Bane do, fight a Jedi to a standstill. Yeah, this is why Cad Bane kicks ass, because he's a legitimate threat to the Jedi. This is what I want to see, you know?
I'm wondering if that reviewer had seen other episodes, because we know that Cad Bane already is a Jedi killer, and he almost killed Ahsoka and Anakin viably, by shooting them out of an airlock.
He could viably be taking their heads back with him, you know, so that's awesome, you know?
Like, all that fight does is show how smart Cad Bane is and how many tricks he has. Like, and even just simple things, like throwing a thing, the wraparound, like, Quillen Voss's legs, to buy him some time to face Obi-Wan. Like, he's a smart fighter.
It's better than a lot of the fights in the prequels. It's better than Obi-Wan's standoff with what's his name, in episode 2. Why can't I remember his name? Jango Fett.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar a lot to his fight with Jango Fett, but it's way more action-packed and in a even better setting. I love that setting where they're, you know, just half flying through the air and onto, you know, mesas and stuff. It was amazing.
And it's just like little things, like when Obi-Wan like jumps and like lands on a rock, right as he's landing, Cad Bane shoots the rock and it makes it fall out from under Obi-Wan. He has to grab himself so then he can turn and face the Quillen Voss. Like, that is just showcasing how amazing that Cad Bane is. And, like, again, I ask, like, did this guy not see past episodes? We know that he's killed Jedi. Like, it's already been established. It's not anything new. And, like, this is hands down one of my favorite fights in Clone Wars. Like, it's in my top five. Like, when I think of this episode, like, this is what I always thought about. Like, and I forgot about everything else because this fight just is so memorable. And we, like, it's so great to see how good Cad Bane is, again, to hold off two Jedi and take them on. He's freaking amazing. And what's also cool is that, like, the stakes are really high for Quinlan. Because we know Obi-Wan lives on to make it to the original trilogy. But we don't know what happens, watching this the first time, what happened to Quinlan and what if he would make it or not. And luckily he does. But it's nice to have those stakes in Clone Wars. Because half the cast make it to episode 3. We know Anakin and Obi-Wan and Padme are always going to be okay. But these characters like Rex and Ahsoka and Quinlan and these people we didn't know about in the bigger universe, we don't know what's going to happen to them because we never saw their fate. So that's always nice to write in those stakes because...
And they kill Zero off in this. I thought Zero, you know, I thought that was kind of shocking, even though they can kill Zero off in this continuity. It sort of made you think, yeah, maybe they could take Quinlan Voss out, you know?
Yeah. And I also just like kind of how Bane doesn't try to fight. Like, he actually kind of tries to talk it out, and the Jedi are the one that are like, no, we're going to take you to prison.
I don't think he's like, trying to talk it out. I think he's just trying to buy time and, you know, he's trying to buy time and read what, you know. I think if the Jedi were like, all right, whatever, you know, he would have slowly backed out of there, but he wanted, you know, he probably knew that they weren't going to back out of there, but he was just going to give it that possibility until the time it was that they had to fight. So
yeah.
I think he was just playing his cards really close to his chest.
Yeah. Though it is interesting that it's kind of it's portrayed sort of like the Jedi are initiating it and Bane's just kind of protecting himself until he's like, but I could just kill you and get money.
Yep, which was what he was thinking 30 seconds before that, you know. But at that point, they're going to fight, so he might as well say it, you know, but that's not what you lead off with.
It's not like he walks out. Well, I mean, honestly, he didn't have to walk out. He possibly could have gotten a pot shot off of Quinlan Voss when they weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he didn't. And
that wouldn't be Cad Bane's style to shoot someone in the back, really, I wouldn't think.
That is very true. I mean, he flat out says that he didn't kill Zero because he's not that messy.
Right.
And I would also argue, what season is it? I think it's season 5 when it's the box trilogy where Count Dooku is testing a bunch of bounty hunters and, like, Obi-Wan's undercover, like, that trilogy. And we see that Cad Bane is honorable. Like, he's an honorable man, even though he's freaking deadly. He still has a sense of honor to him. So I can definitely see that as well. But I just gotta say, like, I completely forgot that Cad Bane got a freaking lightsaber halfway through the fight, and that was amazing. Like, I just started clapping and cheering because I forgot. I was just like, he has a lightsaber! I was flipping my shit. I fucking forgot, and I was so excited. I screamed and scared my cat. It was fine. Just some like kind of like little notes here and there. I really like the design of how the huts are buried and how they're mummified.
Yeah.
Though I feel like I'm wondering how long Papa's been dead, because after a while you start, you know, getting gross and shrinking.
Well, I think that was a stone statue of Papa on top. You know, I think that was his just like a depiction of Papa the Hutt. I think Papa the Hutt was underneath, like his actual body was probably underneath it. They probably just dumped salt on him and let him go blah, 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 back into the ground when they're done.
Oh man, what if like, you know, someone forgot for like trying to season some food and accidentally dumped some Hutt. Like,
yeah, I don't think that was mummified Hutt on top. I think that was just a stone grave marker of Papa the Hutt. Probably like a little skinnier and handsomer than when he died.
Yeah. And my only other note is the first several times, I've seen this episode a lot of times, and the first several times I watched this, I was just like really grossed out by Sai's snoodles. I was just like, oh, she's kissing Zero, it's gross. But like, kind of like what you said at the beginning of all this, like there's some things that like through this watch through I kind of noticed that I never noticed before. She's a really great character. I mean, first of all, she's not a she's not a traditionally beautiful character like
that's
Padme.
That's very human-centric of you to say, Hope. She's probably the Marilyn Monroe of whatever her race is, I'm telling you.
Yeah, but
she's...
like, you know, being human-centric, like, you know, humans are watching this. My cat
doesn't
give a shit about Clone Wars.
Right.
Like, humans are watching this. So, like, when we think of pretty characters, we don't think of Sai Snoodles. But she is obviously very confident. She loves herself, and she knows that she's great, and she knows that she's in a position of power. And she's clearly smart, because she outsmarted the guards to get to Zero, and she also outsmarted Zero this entire episode. And she plays a weak woman at times to trick, like, all the men. Like, when she was just like...
Well, it totally seems like Zero's manipulating her. You know, you're just like, Zero's taking advantage of her feelings towards him to get him out of jail and to have somebody to... to have a companion and to have someone to help him when he's on the run, but you don't really care. That's, you know, what you sort of get. You're thinking more of like, Zero's taking advantage of poor Sai Snoodles here.
Yeah, and it's clear, like, and it's not, that's not what's happening. She's playing him the entire time. And, like, even the guards, like, when she was just like, which one of you are the strongest? You fight it out. And they start fighting, and then she runs over to the third guard, and she's like, oh, no, they're fighting!
Like, I don't know if Gamorrean guards are the hardest people to fool, but yeah. Still, yeah, she knows what to do.
But and she ends up getting, because like she's so smart and she plays her cards right, she ends up getting the job done herself. Like before Cad Bane, before the Jedi, she's the one that gets the job done.
Right.
And so like it's
classic femme fatale. She uses the evil nature of those around her to get what she wants, and she uses her natural beauty to mask the manipulativeness and intelligence, you know, behind it.
And like, I, you know, we saw a little bit of this in Senate Spy when Padme was tricking her ex-boyfriend and Anakin was an angry teenager. But I would actually say I think Sai Snoodles did it better. I think she played that femme fatale role much better than Padme played it in Senate Spy, which really odd to say.
No, I think, like, in the world that Sai Snoodles lives, that's the way you live, even more so than Padme, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I never really realized it before, but Sai Snoodles is a really great female character in this show, in this world. Like, I never thought about it before, but she's a really solid female character, and she's really well done in this episode. And I just had to applaud them for making
A background character in Return of the Jedi. They really fleshed her out well.
Yeah, so I was very impressed, so good job, Dave Filoni. But that's all I had for this episode. So what are your final thoughts on the episode, Chris?
I love it all the way through. It like the guy said, it has everything that I want in a Clone Wars episode. Not like, you know, I mean, there's specific things. Like, I would have thought I would have had more fun if it was Anakin and Quinlan Vos or whatever, you know, little things like that. But for what it had in it and the way they presented it and the way they told the story, it was pure Star Wars. But at the same time, they do that great thing with Clone Wars that they could do, since it's not like a big tentpole movie. They could go, okay, let's do this 40s style, you know? And so instead of a little sequence in a movie, they could do the whole episode as a tribute to an old gangster film and still do it in that Star Wars style and have it just move along and zip from place to place to place. 22 minutes. All this happened in 22 minutes. And then on top of it, you have that battle at the end. I mean, there's just so much stuff. Like, you know, when we were going over the synopsis of all the parts, I would be like, oh yeah, I forgot totally about that snake attacking Obi-Wan, you know? It's a nothing detail in the story, you know? There's no reason for it to happen, but that whole, that sequence is in there too. It was a cool sequence, but it's like, wow, they crammed a lot of Star Wars into 22 minutes, and Zero the Hutt was a character that, let's just say when the movie came out, not a lot of people were really, they were like, well, he's a gay caricature, or he's just a parody of, Truman Capote or whatever, or he's annoying. He's starting to like him in this episode, and then they kill him. It was great.
Yeah.
You want to know my score?
Yeah.
I'm scoring higher than you in this one, actually. I'm giving this one a 9.
I actually
was like thinking about doing a 9.5, but I think 9. 9, it would have been 9, it would have been a 9.5 territory if it might have been Anakin and Quinlan Vos, just cuz I would have liked to have seen Anakin been like, grr, I'd really like to fuck up Gardula the Hutt, you know, or I'd really like to say something to Gardula the Hutt, you know, and but I'm on a mission, you know, or something. But just like that would have been a nice little moment, you know.
Okay, just because you reminded me, going way back to the beginning of all of our notes, because I thought of this as you were talking and then I forgot it. I also honestly wondered what an episode, maybe not this episode, but just any episode with Anakin Quinlan would be like. I think it would just be like flat out fucking destruction, and I could right. see like. I could definitely see, like, Ahsoka being, like, the voice of reason between these two guys.
Yes, yeah.
Just Ahsoka or Rex, and them just being like, guys, we can't do what you guys can do! Chill the fuck out! You're killing all the men! But I just... Because I, from what I know from Dark Disciple, like, Quinlan, unlike all the other Jedi, he doesn't have a platoon of clones assigned to him. So I would actually see him struggling a little bit with leadership, like if him and Anakin were like. Well,
I also don't think he's a fighter as much. He's a tracker and a finder, and I think Obi-Wan has had more fighting experience with him, which is why Obi-Wan spent most of the time fighting Cad Bane, you know, and stuff like that. Quinlan Vos's skill is he's halfway between a smuggler, about, you know, he's got a little Han Solo. He's like the Han Solo of Jedi's, you know. He's more of a he's probably more of a talk yourself out of situations or come at it out of the shadows where he's a tracker, so he doesn't want to be like build a reputation where he's known, you know. So he probably just like tosses nets over people, you know, in a bag over their head sort of thing, rather than, I'm sure he does fight, but probably not as much as Obi-Wan, you know. Obi-Wan definitely was If it was just Cad Bane versus against him, I think it would have been, you know, Quinlan Vos's head getting tossed onto a table for $1 million. If it was Obi-Wan, it might have turned out that way even more, you know, but it wouldn't have been as likely, but it could have happened, you know. But yeah, I don't think Quinlan Vos. I think Quinlan Vos was just what made them, and I say this with a sense of humor, able to easily beat Cad Bane there. They did not easily beat him, but for Cad Bane they did, you know, and that was because they had two Jedi there.
I will say in Dark Disciple, it does, like, have scenes where Quinlan is fighting, and, like, when he first meets Ventress, like, he's able to mostly hold her off, but he's also trying to mask his Jedi abilities because he doesn't want her to know that he's a Jedi, like right at the beginning. But after he finds it out, like, she actually is a much better fighter than he is. And she needs to actually start training him in the ways of the dark side because she's so much better, so he can go after Count Dooku. So, like, it's established that she's a better fighter than he is, and we know that Obi-Wan and Ventress are pretty equal. So, I just thought that was interesting. Anyway, so my final thoughts on the episode. I forgot how freaking good this episode was. I just flat out forgot because it's excellent. And I never appreciated Sai's Snoodles before because I was always kind of grossed out by her in Zero. But thinking about it, like, she's a brilliant character. And Cad Bane is so awesome. And his fight with Obi-Wan and Quinlan, like I said, is one of my absolute favorites in Clone Wars, period, the end. It's just such a good fight. And I hate that this is Quillen's only speaking episode because he's just another fantastic addition to Clone Wars. I kind of wish there was more episodes of him and Obi-Wan because it's like Obi-Wan with Anakin on steroids, like I said. And I just want to see them being forced to work together more and Obi-Wan just being just like, oh God, no, not Quinlan, damn it. Luckily, we do have the novel Dark Disciple for that, and there are several Obi-Wan and Quinlan Vos scenes where Obi-Wan is just like, Quinlan, pay attention! He's like, what? I'm drinking! We're in a bar, we're supposed to pretend that we're drinking, and Obi-Wan's like, you're drinking too much! Anyway, Mama the Hutt is wonderfully disgusting. I love her to death, and the reveal of Sai and Jabba behind everything and killing Zero is just a great twist. And I almost gave it a 9. I gave it an 8.75 out of 10, but I am kind of teetering on that 9. I was just thinking about some of the other episodes that I know are like perfect 10s that I like, The Deserter and Innocence of Ryloth, and I think if there was a touch more character stuff, I don't know where they would fit it in because there's like no room for that. Yeah. If there was like a touch more character stuff, it would have been higher for me. But I mean, this is an action-packed episode. It doesn't slow. It's solid all the way through. It's definitely better than the average.
It's action-packed.
Episode.
They manage though in all that action to they don't really do much character development. But there's still character moments through it, you know, with all the action and stuff. It's the character moments are kind of driving it.
Yeah,
I love it. It's character driven.
Like, I'm definitely more of a character person over plot. So like, if Quinlan Vos had like a good life changing moment, or Obi-Wan or Cad Bane had like a life changing moment, I would have been like, yes, 10, give it a 10. So yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback, either on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week's feedback came from... There's actually two bits of feedback. This week's feedback came from our friend Gene, who had heard our song about him, the da-da-da-da-da-da.
Gene!
And then we continued running it during the episode Corruption, and Aaron was also... left us a little feedback, and then my old high school friend Brian, who left us an iTunes review that we read last a couple weeks ago, sent me a message about a correction about his iTunes name. So, yeah, take it away.
So Gene Hendricks said, to paraphrase Kermit, sheesh, I'm a running gag. And then Aaron Henley said, have you tried Hare Krishna? Except he said Hare Krishna. But I think he's getting Don Kirshner and Hare Krishna mixed together. But that's a Muppet movie gag. Muppet movie joke.
You're a gag.
Gene set it up and Henley knocked it down.
Gene's a gag. Run a gag. Alright. And then I'll read this one because I didn't realize this, but my friend Brian messaged me after our episode. What episode came out? I forgot which one it was.
I think it was the last episode that you read his message. It was either the last one or the one before it, I think.
I think it was Corruption because he wrote it to me before I released the episode the other day. Before we released the Academy. So it had to be Corruption. But Brian wrote, yay, I just fit. Oh, yeah.
Hey.
I just listened to the Corruption episode.
There you go.
I gotta admit, I'm disappointed you didn't catch my pun username, which I read Obi Quiet, and then I was like, oh, be quiet! But it's spelled Obi, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, Qui as in Qui-Gon Jinn, and yet, like W-E-T-T, so it's Obi Quiet.
And then
I wrote back, oh, my bad. I can actually join you this week for our review of Kit Kats because my coworker brought in a big bag of green tea matcha Kit Kats to work, and he gave me one, so I've been saving.
Oh, really? You have a green tea one?
It's my favorite. These are my.
I can switch mine. I had one. I had a mystery one from Japan, but I can switch to a green tea.
Let's do it. Just for your listeners, Chris was bitching about the awful state of American Kit Kats and how he liked Canadian ones better. So our wonderful listener Dario and Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It over on the Teacher Brains Network is a flight attendant, and he sent Chris a big box of Kit Kats from all over the world. And I'll be getting in on this soon as well because Dario now has my address, and he said as soon as he goes overseas again, he's gonna pick me up some Kit Kats,
which
so I'll be able to.
Which won't be long. Right. Okay, so we both got green tea. Mine comes from mine is from China.
Mine is the American green tea of Kit Kat, so it's probably not even good as I've had green tea Kit Kats from Japan. My buddy Michelle took a vacation over there and bought me a bunch for them. And they're a little bit richer than the American version of green tea Kit Kat, so I do know that.
Now I've opened mine up and I'm looking at them. They're sort of a light seaweed green. They're sort of like wasabi colored with some green, dark green dots through it. What's yours
That's
look
what
like?
Mine looks like.
Okay.
It's the same.
Mine's a little fun size pack like most of these foreign Kit Kats. Okay, so I'm gonna try this little bastard. I'm gonna eat this little crunchy bastard. Oh, this is good.
It's not as bitter as regular matcha, or like as regular green tea, but you can definitely taste it in there.
It's very subtle.
Yeah, because it's mostly sweet.
I didn't expect it to be this sweet. It's very sweet.
You can definitely taste the matcha on like the back of your palate, like as the after flavor, more than you can taste it initially. Like once you swallow it, you can taste the green tea like lingering on the back of your palate.
Yes. Yes, I'm totally experiencing that as you're saying it. It's funny.
Because if you swallow it, you can definitely still taste it. But like, it's initially sweet, but that green tea flavor like lingers, and it's so good. I love matcha Kit Kats. They're my favorite.
These are not what I expected them to be like. I expected them to be almost bland.
No. That's part of it, because I don't like things that are like super sweet. So, like, I like candy and I like desserts and stuff, but I don't like super sweet things, and that's why I really love matcha Kit Kats, because they're not too sweet and they're more savory. They're like a savory Kit Kat.
Almost, yeah.
So, definitely.
It's just odd. I was going to say something, and then I breathed out through my nose and was like, ooh.
But definitely some of my favorites. I like I said, like, I've had matcha Kit Kats, like, from Japan, and they're a little bit more, it's been a few years, but if I remember correctly, they're a little bit more savory. They're not quite as sweet, they're definitely more matcha-y, if matcha-y can be used as an adjective.
Well, you just did.
Yeah, so, I mean, and does your packaging also have, like, Japanese written on it?
Yes.
Mine too!
I'm assuming it's Chinese. And it's just a dark green packaging. That's all it is.
There's
no picture on it.
Japanese.
It's just dark green, says Kit Kat, then everything else basically in Chinese except for website addresses and stuff. Although
this
it does say have a Kit Kat in English on the back.
Mine is definitely written in Japanese because this is not what Chinese looks like. This is definitely kanji, written in kanji.
Mine has a weird, I wonder if it's a game or something. It's got a grid on the back of it. A white 4x3, 6, 9, 11 grid with a pen. Like, you know, like a pen and ink pen. Like, here, right on this grid. I have no idea what it means.
But my grid has a little speech bubble. It's a speech bubble and there's a bird.
There's a bird on mine, but it's not a speech bubble. It's just the Twitter bird. I'm thinking.
See, I have two.
Maybe they translate English. Maybe this is a way for them to translate. I don't know. It seems like it would be hard to write on this. It's a candy lit wrapper. It's a plastic.
Yeah, it's really slick.
You need
a permanent marker or something.
Yeah, I don't know what that's for. If anybody out there knows, tell me. I'd be very curious to see what the hell's going on there.
I got two birds on mine. One's the Twitter bird, under the Facebook logo, and the other one is a gold bird, and it's speaking the speech bubble where the grid is that you could write on, apparently.
I put up a post on Facebook there. This is how much I hate Twitter. So I put up a post on Facebook, and someone's like, can I repost this post? And I'm like, sure. And hey, if anybody out there wants to repost all my stuff on Twitter for me, you can go ahead and do that. You can even take credit for it. I don't even want to go on there.
Yeah. Well, that's about it for this week. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, which is the home of all the Two True Freaks podcasts. At this point in time, I'm probably sitting on a record number of podcasts personally to edit. I've probably got 4 episodes of Jay Guys and Jedi in the can now. And between now and Sunday, I'll be recording 3 more podcasts. I got three more episodes of Eat It and Beat It in the can. I got a special episode of Storytellers with Dr. Bill Robinson in the works. A mutant episode of the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales, The Terror, all to edit. And I got another one. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say which show it is, but myself and 2 other people were guest editors. We took over another show and did our own version of it.
You are at liberty because you talked about it like 2 weeks ago. It's Back to the Bins.
Okay, so it's Back to the Bins.
You talked about it like 2 weeks ago that you were taking over Back to the Bins with 2 other people.
I didn't think about whether I should be cryptic back then, I guess. I wasn't thinking about me and my big mouth, man.
It's okay. Just blame it on me.
But yeah, there's all those podcasts. A bunch of them will probably be out by the time you're hearing this. I'll probably have them edited. I'm plowing through them slowly. There's always going to be a Jay Guys and Jedi out every Tuesday on Two True Freaks because I put them up.
Midnight.
I try to put them up as close to midnight on, or I mean Monday or Wednesday. I try to put them up as close to midnight of Wednesday on Tuesday night, so that they come out as early Tuesday as possible. But sometimes I fall asleep and they'll come out Tuesday or Wednesday morning instead of Tuesday night.
And then Aaron panics.
Thousands of people panic across the country. But, yeah.
Aaron's just the one that leaves us the most feedback of panicking.
And we have a lot of, we have a Facebook page, a Two True Freaks Facebook page, where we tell you what episodes are coming out and you can talk about them. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can just go and talk about any kind of nerd topic that you want to talk about with other nerds. And a lot of the individual shows have their own Facebook pages where you can go. There's a Garage Sale Gloat one, Fear the Walking Dead cast one, Back to the Bins has one. All sorts of people got their own pages. So you can find all those through the Two True Freaks page. And, depending on, there's a good chance if there's a show that you end up listening to, there'll also be a Facebook page for it, so where you can talk about that specific topic all you want. But, yes.
I was going to say, in the cantina is where I post my Star Wars Rebels recap.
Yes. Which leads me to ask, what about you, Hope? What about your internet presence?
Well, I run our Jay Guys and Jedi Twitter. You can find us at Jay Guys and Jedi. You can also follow, well, I don't run it, but Gene, the podcast machine, Gene runs the at Two True Freaks. And you can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinets, where I like to live tweet shows like Star Wars Rebels and Timeless and Once Upon a Time is back in 2 weeks. It's going to be a dumpster fire. I'm so excited. I can't wait to live tweet Once Upon a Time because it's going to be atrocious. I'm so excited. Oh, man. And I'm also the news writer for whatthefangirl.com, so you can definitely check me out over there, see what we're kind of doing and all sorts of fun things. And just give us a shout out and let us know. And we would love to hear about from you on our Facebook page, like Chris says. And yeah, cool. Actually, did we? Someone wrote us on Twitter, but I don't think it was anything that was, I think we were just talking about the Darth Maul comic, and it's not anything specifically about our episode.
Is that out yet?
No, issue 1 is. Okay. I think issue 2 is either next week or the week after.
I was at my LCS last week on New Comics Day, and I didn't see it out, so I would have probably picked it up that day. I have to start getting on my Star Wars again, because I left off like 8 months ago, so I'm way behind, but...
I gotta say that,
It's expensive to keep up with Star Wars Marvel these days. I'm happy I got the first year in. That sort of satisfies my collecting Marvel Star Wars bug, but it also... And I got all the early episode or issues... So I don't have to worry about something becoming, like, hard to find or something. So now I can just sort of casually, when I go in the comic store, if I got extra 10 or 15 bucks, I could buy 3 more Star Wars comics and, you know, get 3 more in whatever I need, or one of each or something, and slowly fill it in. That's how I used to buy the Dark Horse comics, when I'd follow any of the Dark Horse series.
Yeah. Gene actually read on the Two True Freaks Twitter account for our episode, The Academy. It's the closing chapter of the Goatman trilogy.
Yes.
On Star Wars, The Clone Wars. So why not join the Conan O'Brien lookalikes at The Academy?
Yeah, that's something I feel so bad that we missed that back in episode 57, that kid looks just like... I was making the Photoshop art for it, and we were like, oh, those kids are generic. Oh, man, we missed so many Conan O'Brien jokes.
I know, we realized that Quirky Cries, Satine's nephew, looks like Conan O'Brien.
And Corky is it's almost Conan-like name, you know? You could almost see Conan being named Corky, or nicknamed Corky. He's very quirky-looking. So. I guess redheads are, Corky's a very redhead name for some reason.
Well, Gene, thank you for running the Two True Freaks Twitter account, we really appreciate it. Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else, Chris?
We'll be back next week, and God help the episode next week to have to hold up to this episode.
I'm curious what next week is. Let's see. Vamp for like 10 seconds.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-bum. Hey, yeah. Hope's typing. She don't know what the next episode is.
Oh, okay. Next week is a very interesting episode, and I actually really like this episode a lot, but for very different reasons than I like this week's episode. So we're actually get to see separatists who are good guys.
Ooh.
I know. So we'll have to see then. And
Renegade separatists.
And we're going to have more Lesbian O'Clock, because it's Ahsoka and Padme.
Yeah! It's a taco party next week.
Lesbian party. I'm actually really surprised you didn't pull out Yoda just then.
Ooh, Yoda pulled out.
Yes! Oh, the lesbians! I'm a girl!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Gutsu wo zwe fe wa long jin la dong wa zo hong su da song yi ding we ba. Anything goes.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."